You're listening to the Patriot Nation Podcast.
All right, welcome into another edition of the Patriot Nation Podcast, of course, brought to you by Prize Picks, the official sports, daily fantasy sports app of CLNS Media. Download the app and put in CLNS, and they will match your first deposit up to $100. But today, it's your boy Pat Lane, as always, with my guy Matt Sien and St. Jean. And today we have a super special guest, a very special guy we haven't had on in a few years. We love him, though. He is the host of the Locked On Patriots Podcast. He is a writer for Pat's Country. He is Mike Debate. Mike, thank you so much for coming on, man. We appreciate it.
Pat, Matt, thank you so much for having me on tonight. You know, it has been a while, but it feels like home every time I come on. So I always appreciate the invite, and thank you for having me back.
It does. Yes. No, we appreciate it, and we're excited to talk some Patriots. We are a week away from the draft. 1 week from today, the Patriots will have already made their pick, presumably, assuming they haven't traded back, or at least pick three has gone by in 1 week. The Patriots may not have drafted yet, but pick three will have happened, and we'll see what the Patriots have decided to do at three. And so we'll get into that. But there was a lot of conversation this week. A lot of things happened this week. And the first of which I guess we'll talk about is this ESPN article, anonymously sourced. We love anonymously sourced articles here in New England, especially when they're written by ESPN. Really kind of flamed Robert Kraft, in my opinion. We've seen hit pieces on Bill Belichick. We've seen hit pieces on Tom Brady. We haven't seen many hit pieces on Robert Kraft, and this kind of felt like a hit piece on Robert Kraft to me.
Yeah, I think you look at what happened there, Pat, and you mentioned hit pieces on Tom Brady. You mentioned hit pieces on Bill Belichick. Well, Robert Kraft's kind of the only one left in Foxborough right now out of that successful triumvirate that brought six championships to the region. So it stands to reason he's going to be on the firing line, and I'm not making excuses for that. I happen to agree with you on this. Look, whenever you're dealing with anonymous sources, and you know, we've all, Pat, Matt, you guys, we've all been there where we have information from a source and you really want to bring it to the forefront and you're trusting your source and you believe that this is something that the public has a right to know. Always have to know exactly where this information is coming from and how close you are directly to the actual source of the material, which in this case would be Robert Kraft and maybe even Bill Belichick. This unnamed source that we're hearing in this piece from ESPN didn't speak directly to Robert Kraft, didn't speak directly to Arthur Blank. We're hearing that it's a source that spoke to two people, a close Kraft friend, and a longtime Belichick confidant. So at this point, folks, I mean, you have to understand, consider the source. And I think, Pat, you're absolutely right on the money. This did feel like a little bit of a hit. But again, we're used to it here in New England. We've been dealing with this for the past few years. We can remember the first ESPN hit piece that came out. I think we're still looking at, you know, we never looked at CBS Scene the same way after that and that big board that was up there. You know, we heard a lot about what happened with Belichick and Brady when Tom was ready to come back. All of a sudden, that came to the forefront. So, you know, these are all strategically placed. And ultimately, I think, you know, the validity has to be in the hands of the beholder. But right now, from what I've seen, I really didn't think there was too much to bite onto if Patriots fans are looking for any type of actual controversy.
Yeah, I almost push back on this being a hit piece on Robert Kraft or Bill Belichick or anybody. This seems like a hit piece on McKay and Fontenot at the top of the Falcons organization and their decision-making, with a nice sideswipe at the Panthers ownership, making comments about the Panthers owner wanting to get too involved in the process. No, I mean, the headline that you'll see in New England is Robert Kraft tries to stop Bill Belichick from getting another job. And then you read the article and all that's in there is that owner of the Falcons, Arthur Blank, reportedly had a conversation with Bill Belichick where they talked about, you know, what went on. And because those two were friends and they've known each other for a long time, and what the contents of that phone call or you know, what's being reported, and some people are saying some things about it and others are saying other things about it. It was characterized in a number of different ways in the article, but we're hearing about it through multiple people, like you were saying, Mike, and it occupies like one or two paragraphs in this entire very long article on the Bill Belichick saga this offseason. Mm-hmm. It's not the main point of this whole thing. I think until we hear otherwise, I think the safest thing to assume here is that Robert Kraft probably had an honest conversation with Arthur Blank about what it's like to work with Bill Belichick, and Arthur Blank took that how Arthur Blank took that. And you know, that's, you can't do anything with that information once he once he decides what he's going to do with it. That's that. I will say, I did note in there that Arthur Blank seemed to be looking for somebody who he could be buddy buddy with as a coach. Mm-hmm. It did hint at that. And if that's who you want, you're not going to like the recommendation you're going to get on Bill Belichick. And
right, correct.
That's not the fault of Bill Belichick.
No, no, it isn't.
Bill Belichick is a lot of things. Warm and cuddly are not two adjectives that are going to be used to describe him. And I think it's possible. You know, if Robert Kraft did call up Arthur Blank out of nowhere and say, dude, don't hire this guy, he's awful, you better have a good reason for it. I'd be upset if he's just doing that to smear Bill, or if it's a personal thing or whatever. But I don't think from this report we have anything that really indicates that at all. Seems like a bit of a nothing burger, carefully timed to release the same day that ESPN also announced Bill Belichick is going to be joining their draft coverage on the Pat McAfee show.
Yeah, you got to love the timing of that, right? And I'm glad that you mentioned the Falcons brain trust, because look, bottom line, if there are people in that Falcons organization that are looking at Bill Belichick now come walking through the doors in Atlanta, a guy that's forgot more football than most people are ever going to learn in their lifetime, it's going to be interesting how some people that have high-ranking jobs in that organization might feel a little bit threatened. They might feel the pressure a little bit to not only live up to what they're doing. I actually made the analogy earlier today on Locked On Patriots from Blazing Saddles. We got to protect our phony baloney jobs, gentlemen. It's really, I think, about learning how to deal with someone not only who has the power and the clout and the resume of Bill Belichick, but also someone that commands the alpha presence the minute he steps into it simply by being who he is. That's a different dynamic than they're used to in Atlanta. That could have played a role as well. So I'm not saying it did, and I don't have proof of that, but it felt a lot like that as I was reading it. And especially when you hear the comments that went back and forth between Robert Kraft and Arthur Blank, two gentlemen that obviously know each other very well, long history, two solid, respected owners in the NFL, they're going to have candid conversations. But ultimately, Blank is going to know what the best fit is for his organization, just like Robert knew what was best for his organization for 25 years up here.
Yeah. I just think to say that Bill Belichick, all right, to not hire Bill Belichick is one thing, right? He's old, you don't want him around, whatever.
Right.
To not have him in your top three is complete insanity, right? And again, to me, what it comes down to is, yeah, the Blazing Saddles reference is fantastic, but it's just so true. Like, if we hire Bill Belichick, what use are we? We're hiring the guy that's going to replace us.
Right.
Right. And I think that that's the issue. That's the thing that I think, and again, who knows? I could be wrong about that, but it certainly feels that way, doesn't it? Like, it feels that way that's how they felt.
When they talked about it in the article that McKay and Fontenot were, you know, they got all the overtures from Bill that, hey, I don't need to be GM. I just want to be head coach. I'm willing to, you know, play my role in this. And they weren't overly convinced by that. To be honest, I also don't really blame them, because it's easy in February to talk the talk about how we're going to have this organizational structure. It's another thing when it's, you know, when you get into August and you get to camp and Bill's got to coach the guys that were drafted for him that he might not like. And now you've got, you know, people ruffling feathers and the owner getting involved and all of that, you know, all that talk can go out the window in a hurry. And Bill's going to have the biggest ego in that room for a reason. He's earned it.
Right.
And I do think the article actually laid out a pretty compelling set of reasons for why he wasn't hired anywhere. It's that you need a certain situation for a guy who is a short-term hire, who carries that much I don't baggage isn't quite the right word for it. What's the positive form of baggage is, I guess, what I'm looking for here. Like, he brings a lot with him when luggage. He comes in the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. Regular old luggage.
Absolutely. Yeah. Match luggage. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, I guess the biggest thing for me is that I'm just shocked that Dallas's situation, right, with CeeDee Lamb in the final year of his contract and Dak Prescott in the final year of his contract and Jerry Jones not getting any younger. And, you know, I just felt like that was the opportunity, that Dallas had a chance to say, you know what, Mike McCarthy stinks. He can't get it done in the playoffs. We're good in the regular season every year, and we choke in the playoffs every year. Let's try to bring in a coach that can have us win in the playoffs. Forget about the regular season. We'll figure out the regular season. He'll win enough, right, in the regular season. We'll be fine. And, you know, and we'll go from there, right? And I just think that that was dumb to me. And then there was talk of, well, this is the last year for Mike McCarthy. And it's like, well, why? Why wouldn't you have done it this year? If this is the last year, then you could assign Dak Prescott to an extension and sign CeeDee Lamb to an extension. You had a chance to do it this year, right, not next year. That's dumb. And so I don't know what then, you know, and I know that the word on Jerry Jones, he doesn't like paying those buyout contracts, right? So he doesn't want to pay Mike McCarthy a buyout. But like, if you actually care about winning this year, that's the team. That should have been the team that hired him. I think that would have made a ton of sense. He would have broken the record with Dallas, right? And you know, all he would have had to do was be there for 2 years. He would have easily broken the record with Dallas. And, you know, he could have ridden off into the sunset. Maybe even imagine if he had went to Dallas and they had won a Super Bowl. Holy crap. Like, it would be unbelievable, you know? And so, and they would look at it and say, oh, Dak Prescott had it all along. And, you know, they were good enough all along. They just didn't have the coaching. And Bill Belichick, everyone would look at Bill Belichick and say, hey, here we are. And it would have been the exact same situation that Tom Brady walked in, where Brady walked into a ready-made team that was ready for him, that just needed a quarterback, and they won the Super Bowl. And the exact same thing would have happened in Dallas. And it's unfortunate for me, you know, that didn't happen.
Yeah, I think the Dallas situation is really interesting. That surprised me too when it happened, believe it or not, because not only are you looking at Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb on the offensive side of the ball, guys that you know can get the job done, and that offense can be high flying. You're also looking at guys on that defense that could be unbelievably enhanced by Bill Belichick and the knowledge he brings on defense. Can you imagine Micah Parsons under his tutelage? Can you imagine guys like Deron Bland or Trevon Diggs coming back, and that secondary all of a sudden being coached by Bill Belichick, who's coached the likes of Ty Law, Stephon Gilmore? You know, as much as people want to erase his name from being in that defensive backfield for a number of years, Asante Samuel, you've got to give him credit. These guys played well under Bill Belichick. He's coached some of the greatest, Darrelle Revis. I can go on and on. So that team, right, to me, as you put very eloquently, Pat, I think was a ready-made situation. Right after Belichick became available, we heard rumblings, and I was never able to substantiate these, did the best I could to try to, but never was able to, that Bill may have not been that high on going to Dallas at that point. I think maybe he wanted to see what else was out there. And say what you will about Jerry, he's not going to sit and wait around for anybody. He believes he's the ultimate alpha in Big D. Even if Bill is coming walking through that door, still wants to remind him who's signing the check. So that could have factored into that decision. But now you're hearing Dallas all of a sudden as a possibility again. And it begs the question, if you wanted to do it last year and you're going to do it this year, why not just do it when the time is right? All of a sudden, now it opens the door for teams like Philadelphia or maybe even the New York Giants if they struggle this year. Bill's got a lot of history there. That's a team that I would definitely keep an eye on. I like Brian Daboll, and I hope he has success and is able to bring that team back. But if he struggles 2 years in a row and Belichick is hanging out there, might be tough for them to lay off, especially if Belichick comes in with a solid succession plan with a guy like Josh McDaniels or his own son. Who knows? I mean, these are all possibilities to think about, folks, but it's going to be interesting. The Belichick roulette wheel is going to be really, really fun to watch these next few months while the NFL season is going on. And you know he's going to be making appearances like the one he's going to make next week on ESPN. It wouldn't shock me to see him pop up on Peyton Manning's podcast or to see him pop up on McAfee again. Belichick is strategic, and he knows that his, for lack of a better term, folks, his persona right now needs a little bit of rehabilitation. I think you saw that last year with how affable he was at the Army-Navy game. I think everybody's still got that. I still have that picture on my desktop. I still have the one with him with the helmet on.
That's great.
You got to love it. And if you see that from Bill Belichick and you see that softer side, maybe all of a sudden it kind of takes the bloom, it puts the bloom back on the rose, so to speak. So we'll see. Going to be interesting and fun times.
And you talk about rehabbing the image too. You read the article, and to a certain extent, you do wonder, you know, how much of the information here is coming from Belichick's camp trying to juice up the, oh, you know, Cowboys were interested at one point, Eagles were interested at one point, Falcons were interested at one point, to make sure that he can put out there, hey, yeah, teams were interested. It doesn't mean that they weren't, but it might be a little, hey, you know, teams did want me, and I will be available next year, and anybody can come get me if they want me. Yeah, it's going to be, I'm very interested to see how he does in this draft coverage, how he covers New England in particular in the QB situation. I'm fascinated to see, and you go back to, when was that, late January, early February at some point when the rumors came out that Belichick was very high on Jaden Daniels. I'm going to be curious, you know, what we see, if that's true, you know, if New England does take him, does he have a comment? If New England passes on him, does he have a comment? And I'm sure he'll keep it professional, I'm 100% sure, because Bill is never going to speak ill of, you know, coworkers. He's always been very, very good about that. But hearing what his actual thoughts are on some of those things is just going to be fascinating. Especially if he does end up getting into coaching immediately after. This is a one-year gap. He goes back into coaching. He could be talking about draft decisions a week from now for players that he is coaching a year from now.
Yeah, something tells me that he's not going to, you know, just the way he is, he's never going to slight anyone. He's never going to sit there and say, ah, this guy's no good, or this guy, you know, really, it's, you know, it's this or that. I think he might, you may hear some value. I'm sure you'll hear some things about, hey, you know, I wonder if you couldn't get that guy a little bit later, or, you know, if there's another player that's similar to him a little bit later, something like that. But I'd be shocked if he, you know, ever said anything bad about a player or, you know, a decision maker for that matter. You know, he just doesn't have that in him, I think, in public. Now, he may say that to you know, his confidants or whatever, you know, behind closed doors, but he's not a guy that I think will ever say that in public.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's funny, I was thinking about that earlier, about Bill Belichick being on and doing a pre-draft show. I want to see the first quarterback that gets the dreaded Belichick stamp of disapproval when he says he's the guy that can make all the throws. That was always an indication that Bill Belichick had his sights squarely set on a quarterback that he was about to make the life miserable of on any given Sunday or a Monday night or a Thursday night or whenever the Patriots happen to be playing. But if we were sitting in the media room on Wednesday and we heard him get up there and go, yeah, he's a good quarterback, he can make all the throws, yeah, you pretty much knew that Bill had this guy's number. So it'll be interesting to see if he uses that terminology on Thursday. I'm looking forward to that.
I was talking about one of the quarterbacks in this draft, one of my buddies, the other day, and found myself using the term, yeah, he can make all the throws. And I immediately checked myself as, oh, if I'm saying that, then I might want to reconsider my position.
Yeah, not exactly. Not great. So, all right, let's move away from the Belichick stuff for a second, and let's get into the new GM, essentially, of the Patriots, which is Elliott Wolf. Had a press conference today, a week out of the draft. You know, and I want your opinion on it, obviously, Mike. I do love the fact that he was wishy-washy. He had no good answers for anything. The team looks good right now. Wow, we're pretty happy where we are right now. Well, we might take a quarterback at 3. We might not take a quarterback at 3. We might move back from 3. We might move up. Who knows what's going to happen? We have no idea. I think that they're playing it correctly in the fact that you have an incredibly valuable asset, right? And right now, depending on what Washington does, it could be the most valuable asset on the trade block right now. Chicago's not moving number 1. Washington doesn't look like they're moving number 2. They might, but doesn't look like they are. You might have the most valuable asset on the trading block right now. And so if you are saying all the things that they're saying, nobody knows what you're thinking or who you want. I think that's the position that they need to be in, right?
Absolutely. And I think Elliot did a tremendous job of walking that line of letting people know, hey, we're open for business. That was a great tagline. Everybody yeah. used it. You saw headlines popping up all over Twitter today. Open for business, open for anything. That's exactly the message that the Patriots want to put out there right now. You're right. They do have the most valuable, in my opinion, asset right now in terms of the trade market when it comes to the 2024 NFL draft, because I don't think Washington is going to move number two. They look like they're ready to zero in. Now, it's interesting that the odds makers, and Matt, thank you for pointing this out to me earlier before we went on the air, that the odds makers are kind of evening out when it comes to Jaden Daniels and Drake May going two to the Washington Commanders. So the question is, do the Patriots value both Drake May and Jaden Daniels high enough where they're willing to go with either pick at number three and go with them as their quarterback of the future? If they like one guy more than the other and Washington ends up with them, then all of a sudden things can get very interesting mm-hmm. because there's a lot of talent on this draft board. Patriots also have an awful lot of holes on this roster to fill. You can make the argument that maybe the guy they need the most might be left tackle Joe Alt out of Notre Dame. My good friend Murph, who joins me all the time on Locked On Patriots, has been beating that drum since the start of draft season. Oh, yeah. And it's hard to argue with him because the compelling argument of what this kid can do to an offensive line is tremendous. Marvin Harrison Jr. is a guy that I know Patriots fans would love to see in Patriot blue. I would love to see a dynamic talent like that. You also have to think about who's throwing him the football. So I caution Patriots fans to always remember that. But there are a lot of holes that need to be filled. And if you can maximize that draft capital for a pick that all of a sudden you'd be making just to make, it's not the MO of Elliot Wolf. He's never done business like that, whether it be in Green Bay or in Cleveland. His father never did business like that. They always look to maximize the value of these picks. And I think that's why putting Elliot Wolf in this driver's seat was a very smart move by Robert Kraft, by Jerod Mayo, because they know this guy can handle the load. So far, I like what I've seen from him.
It's going to be really interesting because I feel like the worst case scenario at pick three is you take a quarterback just to say you took a quarterback. Right. You take somebody you don't love. And obviously, Elliot Wolf says you got six guys that you like, which I think is a really savvy thing to say, because now teams will have to consider that no matter what the Patriots do here, you know, they're going to be in play for a number of quarterbacks. I don't think that's how they really feel. I think GMs get picky about their quarterbacks and tend to fall in love with individual prospects. I don't think there's a chance they love all six guys at the top of this draft, but it means other teams have to respect that possibility. If they stick at three and take Marvin Harrison Jr., now teams have to be aware that, all right, the quarterback might be coming off the board at 34, which means if you want someone, you got to trade up. You got to move around the board. You got to do things. Or the Patriots might be looking to move up. If they trade back, teams have to know, hey, you got to jump New England if you want one of these quarterbacks still. Right. So keeps your options open. I also did think it was interesting they noted Okorafor would be the starting left tackle if the season started today, which I think is what we expected. Taylor Kyles has been all over that as a possibility for a while now. And with that, they also restructured Calvin Anderson's deal a little bit. They've been just giving him a little bit less money. Which makes sense given the performance last year and some of the injury concerns. But, you know, I like the way that I think Elliot Wolf did a really good job of saying a lot and being polite while saying nothing of substance whatsoever. It was, if a guy's name came up, it was, yeah, we like him. Yeah, we like the quarterbacks. We like the guys on the roster. We like the options at the pick. And it's polite and it sounds thoughtful and nobody can ever get offended by that. And whoever comes into New England with these picks is going to have a nice sound bite from the GM beforehand saying that they were excited about whoever. And you also haven't tipped your cap in anyway.
Absolutely. Without any question. And that's exactly what the Patriots would want. They want you to believe that anything and everything is possible. I agree with you. I think they're much more further along in terms of their process of knowing what they're going to do than not. But I think they're leaving themselves an option or an out to be able to change their mind. And these things do happen. I mean, crazy things can happen even the night before a draft. So right up until those picks are made, you never know for sure exactly what's going to happen. You always want to keep your options open. Patriots are doing that, and you can't fault them for it.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. So one of the mentions, I want to jump off something that Matt said, was taking Marvin Harrison Jr. at three. And look, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is incredible. I do. I think he's a phenomenal player. I think he's a great talent. I think he's a guy that, you know, can really be an excellent player in this league. And I think will be an excellent player in this league in short order. The question that I have is it worth it to take him at number three? And let me throw a caveat at you. Is it worth it to take him at number three if you have a huge package on the table, right? Because there's a world in which you're sitting at three and no one's really biting, right? No one's saying, well, you know, I'll give you 11. You know, Minnesota's not calling and saying, we're going to give you 11, 23, and our first round pick in the next 2 years. Denver isn't calling, and it was a report that came out today about Denver, and who knows, you know, the problem with you can pay for the blue check mark is that you never know who's actually a real reporter and who isn't anymore. And so, you know, those reports allegedly that came out today that, you know, said Sean Payton had said to someone like they'd be willing to deal like Surtain and 12 and their first round pick next year and more for one of these top flight quarterbacks. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and of course that's hearsay, right?
Right.
But if none of those deals are on the board and you have to take someone, well, if you don't love the guys there, then yeah, sure, take Alt or take Marvin Harrison Jr. But if you have a trade package like that, do you think I can't imagine, and I'll let you answer this, but I can't imagine taking Marvin Harrison Jr. over a package like that.
I agree with you. I don't think that would be something that the Patriots would do, again, because there's so much uncertainty at the quarterback position, and there is uncertainty along the offensive line. To say that we're going to put all our eggs at number three into the basket of Marvin Harrison Jr., you're still looking at development that's going to take a little while. I love Jacoby Brissett as a quarterback. I agree with everything Elliott Wolf said about him today. He's going to be a great mentor. He's got a good arm, a spectacular work ethic, someone who knows the game, knows the nuances of playing in New England. I know he didn't have a whole lot of time here, but he learned an awful lot in that year, backing up not just Jimmy Garoppolo, but also Tom Brady. So you learn from those guys, you absorb that, and that's going to serve him well here. But I don't think there's anyone that's looking at this right now and saying he's your long-term solution at quarterback for the next few years. If the Patriots passed on a quarterback this year, it's probably a signal that they may be punting the season and looking to get into the same position they were in next year, this year, next year, or they're going to try to pry a veteran away for a stopgap opportunity to contend right away. I think the roster may be a little bit too far away for that. So if you try to build your team, the best thing to do is to build with a foundation, and that means multiple picks and probably shying away from a guy that is a dynamic talent, like you said, Pat, but also comes with an awful lot of development needed at other stages in the NFL. And I just don't think you're seeing that right now from the New England Patriots. So I agree with you. I don't think they would use that three pick on a wide receiver. I think they'd be more apt to deal it if the quarterback that they really wanted is no longer available.
And I believe the Wolf tree, like those guys don't take wide receiver early either.
Yeah, usually. I don't believe they have. No, you're right.
Yeah, so it's tough because it's the Patriots have had an issue at receiver. I think if you want to date it, Brandon Cooks being traded away kind of feels like the last point where they had a true number one wide receiver outside you felt good about. Mm-hmm. And right. It's tough to sit there and know that the guy who can be your answer to that problem for the next 15 years is on the board and you're going to pass on it. Mm-hmm. But odds are that's going to be the right call, whether it's taking a quarterback or taking a trade back offer. It's just going to be – it's one of those that if you have to make the right decisions after that. If you trade back, you got to make the right picks. If you take a quarterback, you got to develop him. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be sitting back looking at that number three pick and thinking about what could have been.
Absolutely. Very well said, Matt.
Yeah, and I just think too, like – I mean, listen, I – one of my favorite draft stories of all time is the Akili Smith story, right? Where, you know, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, Mike, but if you're not, Akili Smith obviously was drafted by the Bengals out of Oregon, I believe, years and years ago. 1999, I want to say. I think it was the Tim Couch year. Either way, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. He was drafted number 3 overall. It was the same year that Ricky Williams was drafted because the Saints were going Saints with Mike Ditka were going absolutely completely insane. And they were just trying to trade everything. They ended up trading their entire draft to trade up for Ricky Williams, but they went completely nuts and they offered something like 3 first round picks, 2 second round picks, a third round pick, and like, or there might have been like 4. I don't know. It was some obscene amount of picks. Like I think it was 7 or 8 picks in total for that one pick. And I think they were moving back from like 3 to 15 or something like that. And they turned it down and drafted Akili Smith. And Akili Smith has someday, when you have time, everyone that's listening, Google Akili Smith's stat line. And it's like one of the worst stat lines in NFL history. It's incredible how bad it was. And so it's like, you don't want to be the team that passed on some insane package because you were so bought in on a guy, and especially not a wide receiver. Even I might even say, if I'm the Patriots and I'm sitting at 3, and I might want to draft Drake May. I like Drake May. I think he's a good player. I don't know if he's the guy. I think he might be. But if some team is going to go absolutely insane and trade you, you know, 4 first round picks or something like that, and a player or what, something like that, I might just say, you know what? I mean, how can I pass on that? I'm so far away from this being a really competitive team. I'll move back. And then if I want to move back up and take Neighbors or Dunze or Joe Walt or whatever, I'll use a pick next year or whatever to move back up and do it. I think you run into this issue where it's like, if you turn down too big of an offer, it almost doesn't matter who's there. None of these guys are a sure thing. In my opinion, at least, I think that, you know, when you look at certainly J.J. McCarthy and Drake May, there are a lot of question marks with all these quarterbacks, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. And look, bottom line, what the Patriots have to ask themselves, and Elliot Wolf touched on this earlier today, it's all well and good to be able to look at stats and to be able to look at highlights. We do it all the time. We do it to evaluate for mock draft purposes. We do it to evaluate for draft analysis. We want to be ready for draft night. We want that little soundbite, that little tidbit that we can tweet out that shows that this guy is the guy that can lead your team to the promised land. But I think Elliot put it best today when he said, you want someone that's going to be able to elevate your teammates. You want someone that can handle, and he said this about a month ago at the Combine, when he said, we want someone that can handle being the quarterback of the New England Patriots. Folks, for better or for worse, whether you agreed with the Mac Jones pick, whether you liked Mac Jones, whether you didn't, I think we can all agree that was probably a poor fit for a lot of reasons. And a lot of the reasons were how he was treated when he was here. But I think ultimately there wasn't a situation where this guy was ready to necessarily take the reins of an organization that was led by the greatest to ever do it, and in my opinion, the greatest that will be ever to do it, in Tom Brady. So you want someone that can fill into that gravitas. It's a lot to live up to, and I understand that no one will ever be able to, but you want someone that's going to be able to take that mantra. When you bring this quarterback into the room, no matter who it is, whether it's Jaden, whether it's Drake, whether it's JJ, whether it's Michael Penix, whoever you happen to be looking at, you have to say to yourself, what are the guys in that locker room going to do when this guy walks into the locker room? Are they going to gravitate toward him? Are they going to play for him? Are they going to put their faith, put their trust in him? Is this a guy that can keep the locker room, not only grab it, but hold on to it? If you can find the guy that can do that, that's the guy that you need to do. Then you need to push all of your chips into a quarterback basket, because you're never guaranteed this spot in the NFL draft again. But, Pat, I think you're absolutely right. Matt, you touched on this. If that guy is not there in your estimation, and there's a huge bag out there that Gerard Mayo talked about earlier this offseason, if the Patriots see what they want in that bag, I don't see them laying off it. So if that's the case, do not be a bit surprised to see that pick move. But only the Patriots brain trust knows that right now.
Well, it's the way you talk about that, too, with what comes with being the quarterback in New England Patriots. That almost to me feels like college recruiting talk a little bit of, here's our program and here's the shoes you have to fill, which I just think is an interesting way to think about it. And there's a certain amount of pedigree that comes with that position now in New England. You know, it's if you go, if you're gonna, you have to deal with the media that you get in New England, and you have to deal with some of the biggest shoes that you're ever gonna have to fill in New England. You're always gonna be compared against the impossible. I feel like we should to do whoever comes into service, we should probably compare them to Drew Bledsoe just to like to give them any fair shot here.
How about like
those
Scott
are big
Zolak.
Shoes too? Yeah,
I was gonna say, man, that's.
Oh, Zoe's going to start yelling at us now. No, we love Zoe. He was a good quarterback up here. What are you talking about? No, seriously, yeah. He was. But bottom line, I think that's a good point as well. And look, it's unfair. I mean, there's no question about it. And you can say up and down that a player should not have to be held to that standard. But it's the fact of the way things are up here in New England. I don't think it's necessarily something put on the team by ownership or by the Patriots brass or the front office. But the fan base is used to winning now. When Drew came in here in 1993, this team didn't know too much success save for getting drubbed in the 1986 Super Bowl by the Chicago Bears. That was about the biggest taste of success they had had, big-time success, since they started in 1960. Now this team has six banners hanging in that stadium. You want a guy that's going to be able to come in and try to help lead you back, as difficult and as unfair as it may be. That's what's on a quarterback's shoulders when he walks through the door. You want someone that understands that and is going to do his best to be able to live up to it. Not necessarily someone who will live up to it, but someone who's willing to take that chance and willing to be able to say to the players in that locker room, see that? We're going to hang number seven, and have the players believe that you're going to hang number seven. That's the type of special quarterback that you want. I don't know if you're going to find that in this draft. Maybe we will. Maybe one of these guys has that in him. Again, the Patriots are going to have to make that decision. They're going to have to be very careful when they do it.
Well, if intangibles are going to be the biggest part of the picture here too, or if for Elliott Wolf, that's something they're looking at, the name that's going to keep coming to the top of my head here is J.J. McCarthy. And mm-hmm. I personally don't feel like he has the profile, list of accomplishments, maybe not the right word, because he did win a national championship. He doesn't have the production you would typically expect out of a quarterback that goes number three overall, and I like JJ. I don't necessarily like JJ the top five pick at any point. But if you want a guy who has the leadership and a guy who isn't afraid to step into big shoes and rise to a moment and take on criticism and lead his teammates, he's the kind of guy who's going to win over coaches, GMs, anybody in the interview room with that stuff. And you know, we've heard all the stuff that's come out about him in the draft process, and I think every quarterback in this draft is good on the intangibles. There's nobody that I'm really worried about on that front. They all seem to have really good leadership skills. They're all respected by their teammates. There's no off-field issues with anybody. The worst we've come up with in this entire cycle is that one of the quarterbacks likes to paint his nails. If that's the worst we have about a group of six quarterbacks, yeah, these guys are all right.
Yeah.
But JJ does, I think, take it to another level. And again, I don't know how I feel about that at three. But it wouldn't shock me if that wins these guys over, if that part of the picture is what they're weighing the most.
Yeah.
I'm going to make our listeners groan a little bit, but very shortly after the JJ stuff kind of broke, I reached out to a friend of mine who's an NFL scout, and I gave him a call and wanted to know if there was any truth to what he was hearing about JJ. And this guy has had dealings with the New England Patriots. He's had dealings with Michigan football. He's a college scout, but, you know, obviously he's an NFL scout, but he's had college experience. So there's a lot there that would lead me to believe that this guy is relatively dialed in. And he's been a good friend of mine for a long time. He said, and I'm quoting him verbatim here, so that way I don't misrepresent. I wouldn't discount New England's interest as smoke and mirrors when it comes to JJ. He was impressive during his pro day workouts. He missed what? Only two passes. He's strong. He has a nice touch on the ball. How could that not interest Wolf and the Patriots coaching staff? And he said, don't forget that national championship line item. It looks great on a resume. They like that kind of hardware over there in New England. So just something to consider, folks. I don't think the Patriots would do this at number three. But again, if, like Pat said, that bag is sitting there and it only allows the Patriots to move down a little bit, JJ's still sitting there. Who knows? I mean, stranger things have happened. I don't think JJ gets beyond five or even six at this point. It would have to be a very minuscule move down, but keep an eye on the Giants. Who knows? Maybe they want to leapfrog a little bit. All of a sudden, that may become a possibility in play. So there's a lot that could go on within the next week or so. That's just my two cents on the subject, but I think a lot of people were really throwing an awful lot of dirt on those JJ rumors, and there might be a little more something to that than people wanted to give it credit for.
Well, and I like it's easy. Like, if you're a fan and you're a fan who's removed from the draft process, you're going to look at this and you're going to see a quarterback who is just part of the offense on a team that won a national championship. Mm-hmm. And I think what you also have to see is it was a guy who was very highly recruited and a guy who is a very good athlete. And you know, if we're going to do player comparisons here, if Drake May is Josh Allen and Jaden Daniels is Lamar Jackson, if we go back to that draft, the guy who J.J. McCarthy has the most in common with is probably a Baker Mayfield. I think there's some similarities in terms of, you know, leadership skills and the way you respond to your teammates. Both guys who are a little bit undersized, who play with a ton of heart and will leave it all on the field. And also both guys who have good but not great physical attributes kind of all around. And Browns took Baker Mayfield number one overall. Obviously, with a lot more production.
Elliot Wolf was in that draft room along with John Dorsey, so that's interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and you know, it's for all the Baker stuff, he earned himself quite a bit of money. He's a good quarterback in this league. I don't think he's ever lived up to the number one pick billing, but he also hasn't been bad. So I don't, that's, JJ would not shock me at all.
Yeah,
that's kind of like it, but it wouldn't. All right,
listen, we are way up against a break here. Before we go to a break, though, I looked up the Achilles Smith stats because they're so outrageous.
Oh yeah,
he started 17 games in his career, finished with a career record of 3-14, with a 46.6% completion percentage, 2,212 yards, 5 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, and a final QB rating of 52.8. That's out of a 150-point scale, not a 100-point scale. So not ideal. So
let's avoid that outcome.
Yeah, let's avoid that one. That would be good. So, all right, we got to take a quick break, and then we'll be back. There's a lot of good questions in the chat, a lot of things people want to talk about. I think we focus a little bit more on the specific draft prospects and also the draft strategy, Mike, and then we'll go from there, okay?
Absolutely.
And we'll be back in a minute. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball, baseball, and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. You can pick LeBron, Aaron Judge, Connor McDavid, and Jude Bellingham all in the same entry. Prize Picks even offers injury insurance so that your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. For basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, Prize Picks will have your back and not count that as a loss. Now, this week, I'm actually going with Aaron Judge, Rafael Devers, and Bobby Witt Jr. to have over 1.5 total bases. And I'm going with Kevin Durant for more than 28 points and Nikola Jokic with more than 10 rebounds. Download the app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, if you download the app today and put in the code CLNS, they will match your first deposit up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. All right, nice. So let's get into some of these guys here. So your opinion at three. Now, people are all over the board, right? As expected, there's some people on the board saying that they're out 100% on J.J. McCarthy. People are saying they like Bo Nix. Our guy, Thad Skywalker, loves Bo Nix, huge Bo Nix guy, you know, and likes him better than J.J. McCarthy. I think he actually likes him better than Drake May, too. So, but hey, and I think that's, you know, with these guys, there's so much, I think, that's there. Drake May, I think, has the potential to be an elite talent. I don't think he's an elite talent just yet. And so there's a question of, if you don't believe or buy into the fact that he will ever reach his ceiling, well, then you're not as high on him, right? And you think you're concerned about it. So what's your personal opinion about the quarterbacks? How do you rank them? And who's the guy? And is there a guy, I guess I would say, at three where you said, if that guy's on the board, let's take Caleb Williams out of the situation because we assume right. Caleb Williams is going to go number one. If there's a guy that – is there a guy that he's sitting there at three and you're saying, I'm sprinting to the podium and drafting that guy?
To be honest, right now, I'm not sure there's anybody I'm sprinting to the podium to be able to take. And I'm being very honest right now. If I'm ranking quarterbacks and I'm thinking that the Patriots are going to take a quarterback, and I believe that's what they should do, I'm going with Drake May at number one at this point. And I think the ceiling for him right now is so high that he makes him worth the risk, worth the investment to be able to bring him in and help him learn some of the intangibles that he's going to need to succeed. What are the biggest knocks on Drake May right now? Obviously, his penchant to push the big play. He has that gunslinger mentality that a lot of people say hurts him and makes him a very suspect prospect coming into to the pro game. Those are intangibles that can be coached the right way. So if you get someone like an Alex Van Pelt that is very adept at being able to look at a young quarterback, look at what they do well, cater to that, but also be able to bring up what they do wrong and be able to coach them into some of those intangibles and help erase some of those bad tendencies, you're looking at a guy that is tremendous, that can make every throw on the field. There it is again, Matt. He has the ability to do that. His arm strength is absolutely out of this world. The guy can scramble. He can get out of the pocket. He can maneuver. He's very athletic. All of the athletic traits you want in a quarterback are there in Drake May. The thing that worries me about Drake, and the reason why I'm not running to the podium to get him, is there have been issues that he has when it comes to dealing with pressure. Pro Football Focus credited him with a 19.6% pressure to sack rate last season. That's a little bit high, considering when you look at some of the average for some of the big-time quarterbacks in this league tend to hover around 10 to 15%. You want that lower than that 19.6. So that's something that you really want to monitor and you really want to be careful for if you're a Patriots scout and willing to go that level to bring him in at number three. But again, his ceiling is higher than I think anyone else that would be in the Patriots range. I love Jaden Daniels. I would put him at number 1A because I believe that if you are dedicated to taking a quarterback and if the Washington Commanders take Drake May, you'd be well suited to be able to get Jaden Daniels in here. Again, it's a different style, but a style that Alex Van Pelt can coach as well. He compares more to a Lamar Jackson, but this guy's a better thrower of the football than I think he gets credit for. You hear all the time about the dual threat capabilities, but this guy can also find any area on the field and target his receivers. His pocket presence is something that he's always struggled with, but I thought he made strides in that last season. I think he will continue as a pro. So to me, he's a guy that the Patriots would be wise to bring in. If you're asking who I rank third at this point, it's not necessarily J.J. McCarthy. I think Michael Penix deserves a little more love than he's been getting. Steve Balestrieri of PatsFans.com joined me on Locked On Patriots earlier this week, and we talked about Penix coming in for a top 30 visit. With the exception of his injury history and a little bit of a suspect performance at the Senior Bowl, Michael Penix right now is showing a lot of intangibles of him being a very good thrower of the football and a very good dual threat when it comes to what he's able to do. So I would rank those guys 1, 2, and 3 in terms of the hierarchies that I would look at right now. I'd probably put Bo Nix and J.J. McCarthy right now on an equal tier at number 4. I love Bo's intangibles. I think there's maybe a little bit more of an upside there, but the leadership factor and obviously the battle test, that side has to go to J.J. So that's how I'd rank those guys right now if Williams is off the board.
Is there an after that group that interests you at all, or...
Well, I mean, you look at some of the guys that are coming out of this class and who would be an interesting fit. I think a lot of people have the eyes on Joe Milton simply because he's someone that is very intriguing with his athletic ability. But I do think there are too many intangibles that still need to be taught in order for him to be a pro-level ready quarterback right out of the box. He's going to need to hold a tablet for a couple of years, learn the nuances of the game, learn how to harness his athletic ability. He could be an intriguing option in a couple of years. I think Joe is one of the most talented players, at the position in terms of raw athletic ability that we've seen in quite some time. But I don't see him ready to come in and contribute. Another guy is Michael Pratt. I think he might be an opportunity. He might have an opportunity to come in and make an impact, perhaps in year one as a spot starter. But neither one of those two guys, I think, have starter level capabilities. If you're looking at the top 6, so to speak, well, top 5 minus Caleb Williams, like Elliot Wolf talked about today, I think it's probably the guys that we've already talked about here.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I mean, look, there's a lot of question marks, and I think what scares people is that there's not that guy, right? There's not that guy that you can look at it and say, oh, yeah, no, I feel comfortable with this guy. I can understand why people have hesitancies about Drake May. It makes sense. Yeah, you should be worried about Drake May because he has, in my opinion, a long way to go to develop. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like Jaden Daniels, but I'm very concerned about Jaden Daniels' size. Right. That, you know, it's one of those things for like, can that guy survive in the NFL at his size? Not many guys do. And I'm not saying that he can't. It's just not many guys survive at his size. And so you wonder. Right. And then it's like, okay, I like Michael Penix a lot. Man, Penix has an absolute cannon for an arm. But I worry about the injury history. Right. I worry about the age. Ben Solak was saying that, you know, and Ben Solak, who I think is a great evaluator as well, he said today or yesterday, that he was surprised after watching the film how inaccurate Michael Penix was and how a lot of his passes got there and ended up getting completed, but he was bailed up by his receiver. And so the passes were there, but not in the right spot. And I think that it's one of those interesting, and that's something that I haven't necessarily seen, but I'll be honest, I haven't sat through and charted every one of his throws. So I don't know, you know? And so I just see the pass and I'm like, wow, what a great catch. He's looking at it saying, well, yeah, but that throw should have been here and it was there. Right. And so and that's one of those things where I just feel like all of these guys scare me in different ways. Yeah. That's the situation we're in.
I feel about a lot of this draft class too. Like even when it comes to receiver, like there's a lot of depth at receiver. Every single receiver to me has at least one red flag once you get into the depth. And it becomes a little bit of a crapshoot there. And coming back to the quarterbacks, like Penix, really like some really good intangibles, phenomenal leadership skills, ability to play, I think under mental pressure. Watching him play a ton of close games, and he would deliver time and time again. It's also a team with three receivers who are going to go in the 100 picks a week from now, and a head coach who got to follow up Nick Saban at Alabama. Such right. A good job. You go to LSU, and it's two guys who are going to go in the first round at receiver and a lead off line. And you go to Michigan, and a head coach who, you know, the Super Bowl jumps right back to the NFL, and who had that offense humming all season long because of how dominant they were in the running game. And Bo Nix in here is kind of sleeping on how good Troy Franklin was for Oregon this past season. And they have an offense that was kind of with them at the college level, the way they were able to spread teams out and find and create stuff. So at four situations there with quarterbacks who performed well, this, you know, fog of war around how much the other on the team contributed to their success. And I feel like at least one of those guys is going to be somewhat successful in the NFL. But which one, you know, it's going to depend a lot on fit and where they land and supporting cast and decisions that are made a year, 2 years, 3 years from now by the team. And I'm glad one making the decision, I'll tell you that much.
Matt, I'm not sure what's going on. Something's going on with your mic there, Matt. I'm not sure what happened, but you're like all crinkly or something. I'm not sure what's happening. Don't know what it is, but anyways. But no, it's a good point. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of question marks, right? And he's right. Like, and I think one of the things that, and I don't know exactly what the stat is, and so I'm going to butcher it a little bit, but and someone pointed out that I mentioned this stat a few times on the show before, but it was WAA, which is wins above average. And it's something that's put out by Pro Football Reference. And, you know, in this case, maybe College Football Reference, which is essentially the same thing. And someone was comparing the guys to, you know, the quarterbacks to each other. So they're looking at the rest of the offense, the other 10 guys on the offense, as compared to, you know, each other. And this WAA would be compared wins above average. So the average player at their position. And in that case, you know, number one, and I forget even who number one on the list was. Whatever, it doesn't matter. Number four on the list, though, was I think 2.5, I believe. It was like 2.5 was wins above average, was number four on the list. And Drake May was number five on the list, and he was negative 0.04. And so essentially what they were saying was that, you know, basically you could interchange all of the 10 guys on offense with a random player, a random average player in the NCAA, and they would have played exactly the same way. And so he's surrounded by all average players. Whereas the other top of this, you know, to Matt's point, the other top of the draft, you got great coaches, you got great players all across the board. You got really good offensive lines. You got really good wide receivers, you know, and you got really nothing at UNC. That for me is, you know, is one of those things that I see and I'm like, okay, maybe that's why you saw some of the weird feet and some of the bad habits that he was in, because he was playing in a bad offense, right? And if he played in a better offense, if you dropped him into Oregon's offense or Washington's offense or, you know, LSU's offense, does he look better? Right. And is he doing the things that those other guys do? Now, of course, he does it in a different way because he's a different player. But like, does he put up the numbers that those guys are doing? Is he up for the Heisman Trophy like Jaden Daniels was if he has Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. with him? Right. So, and I don't know. No one knows the answer to that question, of course. Right. But you just you wonder, you know?
Absolutely, without any question. And again, with all of these quarterbacks, you look at the intangibles that they bring to the table, things that every quarterback needs to do and needs to do well. Are there guys out there that stand out above the rest? Yeah, I think you see guys like May and Daniels, and obviously Williams at the top of the list, having that touch on the ball that's just right to be able to reach the receiver where only the receiver can get it. Those are the types of things that you need to be successful as a pro quarterback right out of the box. So those are the guys to keep an eye on. To be honest with you, I mean, there are guys that, you know, do a great job. I think Nick's does a great job of that, believe it or not. Maybe he's not getting as much love as he needs to in this draft. There's a lot to consider for a lot of different teams out there. What the Patriots see, well, we'll find out Thursday night. But obviously, I think, yeah, I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic, but there's also a lot of reasons to keep your eyes open. And I think the Patriots brass knows that as well as anyone.
I like it. All right. If you traded back, now let's say you're in the top 10 still. Mm-hmm. You trade back with someone in the top 10. Let's say it's, you know, I would. Let's say the Giants, because Giants are at six, but I'm thinking going a little further. But let's say the Giants at six, and let's just hypothetically, let's just say the quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4. Mm-hmm. Quarterbacks are gone. Marvin Harrison Jr. goes at number five. You're sitting at six. Who's your next guy off the board? Is it something that's going to make Murph happy and Joe Alt? Or are you trading back again? And, you know, because you find something different, do you like Malik Nabers? Who's your guy beyond there?
Well, it's going to really determine on what the teams behind you are going to do. And I think that's what the Patriots need to do. You need to be able to read the draft board. One of the things I loved about listening to Bill Belichick on McAfee earlier is hearing him talk about how the Patriots got to Christian Gonzalez and the fact that they were willing to take him where they got him and that they traded down because they knew that Pittsburgh was not going to necessarily, you know, target a secondary guy, and even the Jets because they had Sauce Gardner. So much of what other teams need and what other teams are going to do is going to factor into that. But the other side of it is also teams that may throw caution to the wind and say, forget it, I'm taking the best guy available at this level because I never know when I'm going to be back here again. Me personally, I don't like to trade back. I kind of like to go with face value. That's just my gut. I understand a lot of people do see value in trading, and believe me, there's a lot of reason to do it. I'm going with Joe Alt at number six. If the quarterbacks are off the board and Marvin Harrison Jr. goes at number five, you have a dramatic need for a solid left tackle on this team. And I like Chuck Sikora for, and I know that a lot of people are, you know, kind of giving him the opportunity now to maybe get the starting job. And we heard Elliot Wolf talk about that earlier today. Our good mutual friend Taylor, you mentioned him earlier, has been very much on this train to get him out there and to show what he can do. But Ault is one of those generational talents at the position that you can build on for a number of years. When you've got a solid left tackle protecting a quarterback, no matter who he is, it's going to make him look that much better. So to me, he's the generational talent that you push your chips onto the table and you say, yeah, that's the guy I'm going to go with.
So if you're going QB or offensive line in the first, is there a receiver that you like later on?
Later on in terms of the number 34 pick or trading back in?
34, 68, somewhere like that.
Well, if it's 34, I would really hope that Xavier Leggett is still available on that board. I don't know if he's going to make it. A lot of what we're seeing from the draft hype now has got him going late first round, and I think he's worth every bit of that. This guy has X receiver written all over him. He's got the size. He's got the speed. He's got all the intangibles to be a number one receiver in this league. I would love to be able to get him in a Patriots uniform. The question is, how aggressive do you go? Do you try to trade back into the first round to make sure that you get him? Is he available at number 34 without any problem? If he's there, I think the Patriots take him. I don't see how they lay off of a talent like that. I think the guys, obviously, like a Neighbors, like a Brian Young, those guys, Brian Jones, excuse me, those guys are going to be off the board. So I think you're probably looking at someone like a Leggett. But a guy that I really, really like at 68, or maybe who knows, you may have to throw caution to the wind and move up a little bit, is someone that Pat's loved for a good long time. I think you and I started this guy's fan club. You may have been first on this, but I'll say that I was second on the bus, and that's Malachi Corley.
Let's go.
I love what this kid can do. If I can talk tonight, folks, it'd be amazing. That start and stop step that he puts at the top of his drop really is something that is really amazing. He's got the shiftiness. He's got the ability. Yes, I understand that it may take a little bit to kind of mold him into that perimeter weapon that the Patriots are looking at, but this guy can do it in the middle part of the field, and in my opinion, he can win his battles anywhere. He's a guy that I look at very strongly as well. And you know what? You might throw Roman Wilson in there too. I know we're set at the slot with DeMario Douglas, but you know, I always go by the old adage that you can never have too much firepower. And if a guy's pretty fast and he's able to run your offense the way that offense needs to be run, you take a shot at him.
I like it. I like a lot of this. I like a lot of this. This is great. And listen, Mike, I'm 100% on board with Malachi Corley as well. Corley is an interesting case because he doesn't really run routes, but he just like, I would employ him like Debo Samuel. I would just do what they do with Debo in San Francisco and just throw in the backfield and throw quick screens to him and run him across the middle and do all that stuff. So, all right, listen, Matt's going to finish this off. I have to go because Taylor Swift, I don't know if everyone knows this, people might know, but the Torture Poets Department, new Taylor Swift album comes out at midnight. My 11-year-old is having a sleepover with her daughter, with her friend. It's my 11-year-old, is my daughter, with her friend is over. And my other daughter, and they're like freaking out, and my son's not sleeping because I'm down here, and they're supposed to be down here, and they're upstairs keeping my son awake. So I gotta go, so that they can enjoy the rest of their sleepover. Their sleepover. They wait until midnight till the thing comes out. But nevertheless, Mike, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Love having you on as always. I'm hoping, and we'll see how the night goes, but I'm hoping that you'll be able to join us next week during our live show. And people, if you haven't already subscribed, go over to Pat's Nation Network on our YouTube channel. Subscribe to us there. If you're watching on Twitter, this will be on Twitter as well. We'll be live the entire first night of the draft, all night from beginning to end, from, you know, 6 to midnight, essentially. And I don't know if we'll start quite at 6, but we'll be going, I would say, until midnight. It's a lot of fun. We have a ton of people stop by, and we're hoping that Mike, you know, has got a ton of commitments. We're hoping that you can make an appearance at least for a bit. So
I'll definitely be by for at least a little bit. Thank you much for inviting me. And it's always great to stop by, Pat. Thank you so much for your hospitality tonight, my friend.
Of course. So thank you. Enjoy the album for those of you listening to Taylor Swift. And I will talk to everyone on Monday. With Matt, Mike, Matt, have a great rest of your night, and we'll check in a little bit later.
Nothing.
There we go. Now I got you.
All right. I don't know what's going on my end, but we're back.
That's okay. We figured it out.
We got there. My girlfriend is having people over to listen to that exact same album at midnight tonight. So that's just a little bit ahead of me there. I think before we wrap up, we just had a couple fan mocks to go through. If you want to take a look at some of these with me and weigh in.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
All right. Let's see what we got in the queue here. I think we're going to start with one from Nelson. Nelson is, I like to call him the auctioneer because when you read off his mocks, there's quite a lot going on. He likes to trade back. I'm not going to read through all of these. So if you're listening to the audio version of this, jump on over to YouTube if you want to see the full version. It's basically all trades. But some of the names for the Patriots is Drake May and Brian Thomas. You see Patrick Paul in there. You see Xavier Leggett. Javon Foster, the tackle from Missouri. Tip Ryman in there. Tyrone Tracy is in there. Sione Vaki. Are there any names on this one that you do you like?
Yeah, I think I've been definitely on the Tip Ryman train for quite some time. I think this kid is the best pure blocker at the tight end position in the class. And I think the Patriots have an opportunity to bring him in if they were to draft him in the middle to late rounds. I think this kid absolutely would be a welcome addition, especially when you have two very adept pass-catching tight ends like a Hunter Henry and a Austin Hooper, bringing someone in like Tip Ryman, who's brings a little bit of nastiness, a little toughness to that position, I think would be a welcome addition. Obviously, I've talked about Xavier Leggett earlier, but Patrick Paul is a guy that I think could be very intriguing for the Patriots right around that 30 mark. If the Pats are going quarterback at number three and they decide that they're going to wait on an offensive tackle, he may be a great opportunity. He may be a great, solid addition to New England, a massive tackle with great wingspan, great lower body strength, all the intangibles you need to be a starter. He could be a potential steal at this point for any team if they're getting him at this point at 38 in the second round. If Patrick Paul is going in the second round, I think it has a potential to be a draft steal. That's how high I am on this guy.
Paul is an interesting name there too, because we had Nate Tyson a couple weeks ago from The Athletic, and he really liked the Patrick Paul fit for New England. When you bring in, you know, what the Packers have done historically with the Elliott Wolf connection, when you bring in, you get an offensive line coach now from the Bill Callahan tree, and what Bill Callahan has liked from his offensive line, and he loved the Patrick Paul fit. And he and Dane Brugler were also going on and on about Tip Ryman today as a day two, day three tight end, where they like the upside. He and Theo Johnson, both in that category. Right. Let's go to the next mock here. We got one from Old Man Mob. This one has a trade back. We got Troy Fatanu at 11, Michael Penix at 23, Xavier Leggett at 34, Cam Hart at 68, Jalen McMillan at 103, Jaheim Bell, Anais Smith, Joe Milton, and Zion Tupola-Fatui to round that one out. What do you think about this one?
Again, I'm going to go and I'm going to gravitate toward the tight ends, it sounds like. But Jaheim Bell, I think, is definitely an interesting prospect at this point. When you look at where he started off at South Carolina, comes in, plays for Florida State last season. Good amount of size, 6'2", 241, caught 39 passes, 503 yards, 2 touchdowns, even had a rushing score. So, you look at guys that can be physical at the tight end position, able to get yards after the catch. Alex Van Pelt loves guys that can get yards after the catch. Good quickness, solid route running, good athleticism. I think he could be a solid Y tight end prospect at the pro level, especially for the Patriots. Give him an opportunity to learn behind a guy like Hunter Henry. You could be looking at someone that might be a solid tight end here in New England for a number of years. So I like that at 137. I like these value picks now coming into the latter part of day three. This is an intriguing one for me. Anais Smith as well, coming out of Texas A&M. A lot, like I mentioned earlier with Roman Wilson, very similar skill set to that of DeMario Douglas, but someone that I think could slip because of the difficulties he had with a fractured leg and missing most of 2022. He could pop back in there as someone that could be a solid prospect as well.
Bell is somebody who our comment section has loved on this show for a long time now. And I like him as a fit in this offense with AVP. I think that makes a lot of sense. Do you have any thoughts on Jalen McMillan there at 103?
McMillan, I think, is an interesting prospect. I like him as a pro-level prospect. I'm not sure if the fit here in New England is going to necessarily be the best. I think he still needs a little bit of seasoning to be the type of receiver he would be called upon to be here in New England. I think there's talent there that could push him to more of the top echelon of wide receivers that are in this class. But at the same time, I also think that the Patriots would probably be looking for maybe a little someone more physical on the perimeter. So I like McMillan, but again, the guy that I'm looking at for the wide receiver right now is at number 34. I'm really developing a huge draft crush on Xavier Leggett the more I watch him.
Leggett is such an interesting, I feel like he's a polarizing guy. I'm not personally in the Leggett camp, but I do see the appeal. I get it. I don't know if I like him as much. I don't know how the NFL is going to view him because of the fifth year breakout. You know, anything from late first to early third, I think, is on the table for him and every other receiver in that tier. I'll move on to the next one. We got a mock here from Ben. We got quite a few trade backs in this one as well, so I'll just read through some of the picks. Brock Bowers leads it off at 13 for New England with a trade back. Jordan Morgan, Ladd McConkey, and Xavier Leggett all in the second. Mark Perry, a safety at 188. I believe New England just met with him today, recently. Any takeaways from this one?
Well, obviously, I kind of gravitate toward the offensive tackles here because I think that's where the Patriots might be in the market for one, is right around that number 34 pick. Jordan Morgan, to me, is very intriguing and someone that, again, if he's there and you're able to bring him in, this is a guy that could really make an impact and I think be an immediate starter. He played 5 seasons for Arizona, 41 games, 37 starts, all at left tackle. And this guy was an honorable mention all-conference nod in 2022 coming from Arizona. So, you know, you're looking at someone right now that could play, you know, and I think at a high level right off the bat. And again, this is a big need for the New England Patriots. So I like the pick of Morgan at number 34. Depending on how we've seen him mocked lately, he could still be there, but there is a possibility that he may be off the board by this point as well. But if he's there at 34, you got to give him his just due.
And I think Bowers at 13 is also interesting. If the Patriots do trade back in the first round, I'm not sure if Bowers makes it past the Jets at 10 or the Broncos at 12. But yeah. If they don't love who's available at tackle and the top three receivers are gone, you know, Bowers is an offensive weapon. And I really would not be upset with that pick at all. Our next mock here from Matt Menito. It starts off with May, McConkey, and Leggett. McConkey at 44, Leggett at 63. You got Blake Fisher in there, Ben Sinnott, Matt Gonsalves, and a couple of round 7 guys. I know you're going to lean towards Leggett here, but McConkey and Fisher, do you have thoughts on those two guys?
McConkey, I think, is someone that is going to be an immediate contributor at the pro level without any question. This kid does his best work in the slot, but he is a workman wide receiver that can pretty much do anything that you need him to do. Love the intangibles he brings to the table. You know, he's coming from the Georgia program. He's well coached, well ready for the pros. And I think, yeah, at number 44, this is a great pick for the New England Patriots. If they're able to pull this off, this would be phenomenal. I do love Leggett. There's no question about it, but Fisher is the most intriguing name right now to me on this list. He played a very key role with Notre Dame in the shadow of Joe Alt, and that's a big shadow, by the way, folks. But you got to remember that Blake Fisher cuts an imposing, figure himself. He's 6'6", 312, so he's not necessarily a guy that's going to back down from anyone. Played all his games at right tackle, started all 12 games last season for Notre Dame. That unit was a semifinalist for the Joe Moore Award. That's given annually, folks, to the best offensive line in college football. But the thing that I like about Fisher, and I think this is one of the reasons why the Patriots brought him in for a top 30 workout last week, Scott Peters worked with him a lot during his pro day back in March. He knows mm-hmm. that a lot of his prowess is going to be at right tackle, but he does find that the intangibles that he brings to the table could allow him to move to the left. This is an interesting one to watch. I know a lot of people are saying it's not a solid fit, but if they feel that Blake Fisher can play effectively on the left side, You may have found your new Trent Brown here, folks. So keep a sharp eye on Blake Fisher throughout draft weekend. If he ends up in New England, you know they definitely saw something in him. I think there's a possibility this could work.
And Fisher is also, yeah, still very young. He started on the left side. He got Wally pipped there by Joe Alt because he had a he started, I believe, his first game at left tackle as a freshman, got hurt, missed the rest of the season, and then Joe Alt came in and had to move to the right side, which isn't really not really his fault that you're moving to the right when Joe Alt's the other guy. So certainly a very, very intriguing game there. We got two more. This one is going to be from B-Ham. B-H-A-M-M. Another trade back in this one. First four picks for New England in this one. Tyler Guyton, A.D. Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, and Michael Penix, all in the top 42 with a series of trades. You also do have Blake Fisher in that one. Theo Johnson, UNH legend Dylan Lauby in this one. But let's start at the top. Tyler Guyton, A.D. Mitchell, two guys we haven't talked about in here at all. Where do you land on those guys?
Yeah, Mitchell, again, is a solid prospect, someone who really, I think, has the ability to be a solid receiver in this league. I like what he brings to the table, and I like the intangibles. So, again, somebody that you can definitely be able to utilize for that X role. I love this, and especially the value of where they're getting him. Tremendous pick here. Guyton has been someone I've had my eye on right along. Obviously, another massive tackle, a guy that comes to you from Oklahoma, someone that you know is going to be ready to make that step, and a guy that's versatile. Once again, someone who can play on the right side, he can play on the left side. He's someone that's going to come in and play exactly where his coaches tell him to play. And if you can get a guy like that, especially to protect the blind side of a quarterback coming in and put him over there on the left side and make him your solid left tackle, yeah, I think you're doing something right. So I love Guyton in this pick, in this mock draft. That was a very savvy pick to get this one going.
Yeah, Guyton is another guy. It's interesting. And I think, you know, what makes the tackles to the top of this class interesting is you have a lot of guys who've played on the right side, which is that's the one spot in New England's offensive line where you feel good right now.
Right.
So how they evaluate that, I think, is going to be telling how they evaluate these guys if they're looking at anybody who can switch sides. Last one for the night. This one is from Michael, who I know he had a whole email to go along with this. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the mock, he has Marvin Harrison Jr. at 3, Kingsley Suamatia at 37, Jonathan Brooks at 46, Ben Sinnott at 105, Tanner Bordellini, MJ Devonshire, Cedric Johnson, Jalen Coker from Holy Cross to round it out. You talked about Joe Alt being a guy you like at the top. We talked about the Marvin Harrison Jr. stuff. What do you think of this approach to wide receiver and then tackle to open it off?
Two of the best in the business right now, two of the best in the class you have going at Marvin Harrison Jr. at wide receiver. And look, I've been vocal about the fact that you have to be careful about bringing in a top-level wideout without having a top-level quarterback to be able to level that out. But when you have a talent like Marvin Harrison Jr., sometimes it's just very difficult to lay off that. So I get it. I understand making the pick here at number 3, and I don't necessarily have anything negative to say against it. I love Kingsley Suamataia. I really like his fit, potential fit in New England. And I also like the position that Michael was able to get here. Good name, good solid picks here. Suamataia is 6'5", 326 pounds. Outstanding speed and athleticism for an edge blocker of his size. He's reliable in pass protection. I love that he shows that toughness, that tenacity as a run blocker. The thing that I really love about Suamataia is he's very good at quick pulls and screens. That, I think, is going to allow him to assimilate into a pro-level offense, especially the type of offense that Alex Van Pelt likes to run. I want to see him work on his hand placement, his lower body strength a little bit. If he can harness that, this guy's a solid starter for a number of years to come in the NFL. So good, solid pick to start these two off.
Yeah, Suamataia is definitely another polarizing guy. I know he's very much what you see in him is what you think your offensive line coach can develop, I think, as well. He's very young. He's still unpolished in a lot of ways. I think his good reps, he looks like a franchise tackle and his bad ones, he looks like somebody who doesn't belong on the field. And it's just, I think, building some of that consistency for him, which would be big. And it's Iowa Mike had elaborated in his email. I'll summarize here that he doesn't like the odds of taking the third quarterback at pick number three. Just historically, he doesn't like how that's worked out for teams. And I think he says, if you're going to shoot for the moon, just take the best player available, take Marvin Harrison Jr. and build your team from there. And you know what? I think there's merit to that approach. It isn't necessarily what I would do, but I do think there's merit to that argument for a team building strategy. And you know, this offense is devoid of talent. I'm not going to get mad if they just take a receiver who fixes their biggest issue and you move on.
Absolutely. You know what? If he's the best player on the board, and arguably, I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. at three could be the best player on the board, and that is including the rest of the quarterbacks that are available. It's hard to lay off that. I can't argue against that in any way, shape, or form. Whether it's what I would do or not, like you said, is another kettle of fish. But right now, I think that there is an argument to be made, and I support it.
I think that's a good place to leave it off with 1 week until the NFL draft. Mike, thanks for coming on. Let everybody know where they can find your stuff.
Absolutely. Matt, thanks so much. You and Pat, you guys do a great job here on Patriots Nation Now, and I always look forward to coming on to be with you guys. I also look forward to both of you joining me on Locked On Patriots very shortly, folks. So keep a sharp eye out for that. We like to do crossovers here as much as we can. We're all a big happy family up here in New England in terms of you know, the New England media. So we always try to do what we can. But you can catch me each and every day on the Locked On Patriots podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Just dropped my final mock draft on Locked On Patriots. So if you want to hear what I would do in the New England Patriots driver's seat, definitely check that out. You can catch all my written work over at Pat's Country as well.
Definitely go check that stuff out. Pat and I are going to be back for our last pre-draft show next Monday night. And then, you know, we're going to get things rolling with, you know, it's funny the way the NFL works, and that this is going to be the first big decision, I think, for Elliot Wolf that next Thursday night. And it also may be the decision that gets him extended or gets him fired. You know, it's the way it works in the NFL. Yeah, here's the job you've wanted your entire life. Now, the first thing you ever do in it will decide if you're a success. But that's the way this business works. Going to be a stressful night, going to be an exciting night. I believe, Mike, you're coming on for that at some point. So,
absolutely, definitely. And a special thank you to all of our listeners out there. Thanks for hanging in there with us and hanging in there with me, especially tonight. I appreciate it. It was my honor to be on this show and to be with all of you tonight. So best of luck and enjoy the draft coming up. It's going to be a fun one for us Patriots fans.
Yes, it will be. That'll do it for Mike. I am Matt St. Jean. We'll see you on Monday night. Thanks for listening.